Did that every time. Scare myself. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. Let the record reflect. Time is 3:36. We're a little bit late for the technical side. We had to get a briefing. Today we have President, Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Costello, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Hall, and myself, Chair Schauer. I'd like to remind everybody, please silence your cell phones. Staff assisting us today, we have an arrest from my office as a committee aide. We have Carrie with Senate Records and Alex with the LIO. We only have one item on today's agenda. It's going to be a briefing on ranked choice voting. Since we know it's coming, we talked a little bit about this last week. And just to be clear, we're going to have another series of still ranked choice voting, for lack of a better term, debates, hearings, because we need to get this in front of the public. The bottom line is it is confusing, and there's a lot of data showing that it can suppress the votes of certain minorities and others. So what we would like to do in this committee talking to folks is make sure that, one, we can help educate the public so they know what's coming, like we're going to do today with the director. Also like to have folks on both sides of the debate come up so we can discuss this, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So we're going to try to keep this at the forefront throughout the session, since we know it's a new system and we have redistricting and all these other things. It's kind of a contentious year with a lot of changes. So trying to help the public be up to speed on what's happening is, I think, one of our duties. So we're going to do that throughout and try to keep it fair, that all sides kind of come in and talk and give their pitch. And we as legislators will ask our questions and do what we want. And I think I saw a question or a comment.
Just a really quick comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Just the comment that was made about debating the situation. I mean, this is the law of the land. It's the election that is going to happen in the fall this year. And so I don't know that we need to rehash whether it's great or bad, but really what we need to do is ensure that folks know how to vote in the next election cycle. And that's what director is here for, to explain. And it's really incumbent upon us. And really, I think that we all want to make sure that folks know how to vote for us. Right? I think that's the thing, is that we want people to be comfortable with the system that we have in place. And it is the law of the land. It's, again, challenged by the Supreme Court, up to the Supreme Court on the 18th and finalized. And it's something that will happen. So I think there doesn't – I don't know that we need to have a debate about whether it's good or bad. We need to have a debate about how we make sure that voters are not disenfranchised in the future. So
thanks, Senator Kawasaki. I agree with that, which is why we've got the director here to talk about it. I guess if you want to not call debate, my goal is to have the folks that were the proponents and those that see pitfalls in it show up, because I think that's part of educating the public. You need to understand what there might be pros to it. You need to understand where the pitfalls might be, as have been pointed out by folks across the country that have been doing it a long time. And since this is part of the education of the public, that is the goal, is to get them here so we can talk about those things and then have us as the legislators ask those questions and go, okay, well, what do we tell people? How do they need to do this? What do they need to learn? Where do you study? You know, what do you study? Because there are apparently, again, and not knowing it enough, there are some pitfalls to this system and how it works and how you have to do these things. I mean, I can tell you last week, there was four of us sitting here trying to argue about how the ballots work, and no, all four had a different answer. So, and we say, well, this is going to work. It's great trying to educate people. But we also know that most of the public is going to show up on the night of the election, not having looked at this, not having spent a lot of time at it. And they're going to look at a bubble sheet and go, what the heck am I supposed to do with this thing? That's reality. We know that. So it's not that easy. The data from across the country shows it's not. So I just want to make sure as best we can, Senator Kawasaki, that we are spending time on this as a legislative body to have this broader debate. Hopefully we can take these and we can broadcast this to people. We can take these and put them on social media and other things so people can listen to us and have a chance to really think about it and dive into it, because I think they need to understand. They're going to show up, and it's not what it's been, where you just put down who you want to vote for, they tabulate it, and off we go. This is a ranked choice system that's going to have a lot of choices in there, and you need to understand how your vote may play out and be very careful and methodical to how you do that. It's not that. So we're going to talk about that, of course, but it's not that simple. And to be clear, so you know, you can – we're still executing that policy. I didn't say it. If you're speaking, feel free to take your mask down. You can leave it on your call. Yeah, I think you want to follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, so I guess in that same vein, will the group that advocated for the ranked choice vote,
I know what you're asking.
Have they been invited yet?
I haven't talked to them yet, but they're going to be.
And
they'll be
okay,
part of
so
it.
That group will be involved. And I mean, it was a former member of this of the
yes,
the
it was
body who was part of that. And I think that they just need some time to be able to talk about how it works and what the functionality is.
Yep. Oh, this is generating discussion right up front. I didn't think it was coming. We'll start. I just saw the first hand was Cynic Stella, and then Rambled.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't expect a lot of discussion before the presentation, but I just wanted to mention that we throw out there that all these other states use ranked choice voting, and I think we need to clarify that. We are the second state in the country to use ranked choice voting in statewide elections. So we are on the cutting edge. Right. We are trying something new, kind of unproven. So I just want to put that on the record that, when we say, oh, everyone else is doing it, but it's not in statewide elections. So this is different, and I appreciate the committee giving us a chance to learn more about it. I know that a lot of different groups in the legislature were invited by the organization that brought this forward, except for the Senate majority. So this is the Senate majority's first opportunity to have a special presentation.
Thank you. That's very true. And when I say that across the country, there was a report that I still haven't made available because I've got to finish reading it from a Princeton professor that looked at almost 100 events across the nation. Most of those were local, San Francisco, other places, New York, to do a deep dive into the data. So, again, trying to educate people on how it plays out, how it works, et cetera, and what happens. So we will have that as well, including that professor will come and give us his take on things so we can look at it again, trying to get the information out so people understand it. Because, again, I do believe it's complicated looking at it because we just had a conversation in a legislator's office and none of us could agree on how it worked. So, and that's taking time going through it. So that being said, thanks for the comment. Senator Reinbold, I think you had something.
So I hope that you take this in stride, Senator Kawasaki. But every time almost the Democrats are in charge, they do not allow for debate on both sides. I can give you dozens of examples over in the House. I can give you an example right now of the Senate Democrats and the Ledge Council Representative Hannon right now would not allow debate on the masks. I think the masks are a clown show. It's an absolute masquerade. I don't think they should be telling me to wear a medical device. I think this PCR testing every 4 days is insanity and completely not only unconstitutional, but it's federal illegal and illegal in state law. We couldn't even have that debate. So you're asking for something for Senator Schauer. Let me just finish because this is impacting my life every single day. And this is not directed at you. I'm just saying you have an expectation that he has to draw on all sides as chairman, but yet when the other side, your side of the aisle, oftentimes is in power, we don't get that opportunity. And I am very disappointed in legislative council right now. They wouldn't even, let alone allow me to ask questions. They were being called out of order, but they wouldn't even allow experts on the other side to come. So practice what you preach, you guys. That's all I'm saying, okay? Thank you.
Before we get too far down that path, if you have a particularly germane one to the committee meeting for the ranked choice voting, we'll get back on. But if you want to respond, Senator Kawasaki, I know Senator Collin probably wants to jump in because he hasn't been the only one not to speak yet.
Just really quickly, the only thing that I brought up was that we don't have to debate ranked choice voting about whether it's good or bad at this point because it's the law of the land. And the thing that this committee should do and the legislators should do is say, look, this is how it works. And, we'll talk about whether it works better or worse than it does at some point in time in the future. The debates on whether we should be masked or not masked, that's a debate. And that's something that's healthy. That's something that we should do in this body as a legislature. And I fully embrace the debate. But I mean, when it comes down to ranked choice voting in the 2022 election cycle, this is the law of the land. This is what we should be doing. And we should inform people as to how it works. Maybe not necessarily the bad or the good, but this is how it works, and this is how you will be voting in the elections come August and November. So that's all I meant by it. We don't need to debate this because this is the law. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, no worries. Like I said, I already committed to that last week that we're going to have other groups on here because I think to get to that point that you're contending, Senator Kawasaki, is you have to talk about the mechanics of it. And I think we have to invite experts that have been looking at this for years when it's new to us. And we have those experts that will be available to do that we are finding. So we'll go through it. There's a lot to learn from it. Senator Holland, I think you actually had something to say.
Yeah, I just want to know why all the members of the other party get the cool names in the graphics. Brent Mustang Burger, Duke Kaboom, and Finn McMissile. We have no...
I don't know. That's a question for the director, I guess, when she gets up here. Okay, so that was a rather robust debate from the beginning. I didn't expect, but that's okay. sometimes it takes the turns you don't see coming. So here's the goal, folks, from this one now, is we have the director of the Division of Elections, Director Phenomia, is going to come on up here if you could, and we'll get you on the record in a second. We have Nick Murray, who briefed the committee last week as well, just so that we can talk about some lessons learned from what the director talks about, how it's going to work from what they saw in Maine, since they have a similar system, just to look at the different issues. So it might be able to answer some of those questions that we're kind of scratching our head on going, well, how does that work? Because they'll be able to tell us how they saw it work. They've gone through two of them now. So we're going to have both of you up. But, Director, you're the primary, so please come on up and put yourself on the record. You know how it works. And then we'll get started. And, Nick, I know you're online, so if you want to put your hand up or just ask a question or make a comment based on things you guys have seen from RCV and Maine for the last 4 or 5 years, just go ahead and jump on whenever you need to. And, Tom, I see you there. If there's something that comes up, we'll obviously keep you as a lifeline. So, but primarily we're going to have the director. I said this was her time to give the brief and go over it because, as has been pointed out, this is the law. We have to deal with it for now. So let's go ahead and get started. Director, when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail Fidimiai from the Division of Elections, here today to talk about ballot measure number 2 implementation. You know, and I just want to make it clear that we're here to talk about how this is going to be administered. I'm not here to discuss how it's right or wrong or better for one side or the other side. The Division of Elections is a nonpartisan agency, and we're tasked with implementing this new law. And so, contrary to popular belief, because we have been making multiple presentations about this at various organizations, some people just think that the Division of Elections dreamed this up and this is something we put into law, and it's not. It's a ballot initiative, as you all know, and it won by a margin of just a little over 3,700 votes in the 2020 general election. And it took effect February 1st of 2021.
And, Director, as you get started, to make it crystal clear for the record, that is the intent here today. This is not a gotcha. This is not bringing Nick in here because they have different thoughts on it. I just want, as we go through it, if we get to a stop point or there's a question or we kind of scratch our heads on something, I would like to hear your thoughts on it as we get these questions for you. But if we kind of go, well, how did that work there? I think that's why I asked him here, not as a counter to the brief today, but as somebody that has lived it there in Maine and researched it, what did you learn from that? Was there something we can take as a lesson learned that they saw? That's all I'm asking for. So Nick is here today in that role, to be clear, and I want that for the record so people don't think that's what the intent was here. It is not. He knows that. I talked to him about it. I wanted him here as a lessons learned guy for us as we go through this, because we're going to have some things here that we talk about and go, well, why is that, or how does that work? And it would be helpful to have people from another state that have worked. So just so that's clear, that's the intent today, so that you heard that, because I know I can kind of feel some sense of maybe this is like a setup, and it's not.
No, understood, so. Mr. Chairman. I was not trying to insinuate that whatsoever. It was more a general comment for the public.
Understood.
Just to
fair.
Let them know.
Your point to that is fair. You're just executing policy, totally get it, and it is the law, and that's what we're dealing with. So, Senator Ramble,
Through the chair, just a quick point of clarification. I believe 3,700 was right around 1% of the vote, so it wasn't a large margin, correct?
That is correct.
That's correct.
Chair, Senator Rangel, yes.
Okay, and then the second thing is, I'm not sure people understood what they were voting for, and so that's another reason why I do think that ballot initiation process needs to be clarified, that people need to know what they're voting for. I bet if you ask every person that signed that petition if they could explain this, I bet a good part of those people could not. So that's the second thing. And number third, I wanted to ask you, was this audited at all? Was this portion... did it have a forensic audit, or did it have an audit in regards to this ranked choice voting? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Reitbold, there was no forensic audit conducted related to ballot measure number 2. As I mentioned to the committee last week, there was a statewide hand count of ballot measure number 2 that took place in Juneau, and there were public observers watching. And the results of that hand count are available on the division's website, and it did not overturn the outcome as certified by the state election board, or state review board.
Thank you. And quite frankly, Director, I want to see this brief from you. We haven't seen it yet. So I'm just as curious as anybody to see how is it explained and how does it work and just how simple it is. So quite frankly, I mean, I asked you to come here for a reason. I'd like us to see this because I think a lot of us have not gotten this brief yet. First time for me. So
understood,
I'm ready.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Okay, so with that, we're gonna start. So a lot of talk is done about the ranked choice voting part of things that will take place in the general election, and people need to remember also there is a new primary system also. which is one ballot with all candidates for all voters, regardless of the voter or the candidate party affiliation. Voters will choose one candidate per race, not four, just one. You mark one, just like it says up at the top there, vote for one. So you will vote for one in each race. And then the candidates with the most votes, top four candidates with the most votes, are going to advance to the general election.
So I'm going to ask, yeah, me too. Just going to ask a bunch of questions. And some of these I kind of know the answer to. Some of them, so I'm asking just so it's out there in the record. Some of them I honestly don't know. So we see five, for example. How many can you have? I understand you can have multiples or you can have up to plus a write-in slot. Is that correct on these?
Mr. Chairman, for the primary, write-ins are not allowed, and there is no statutory limitation on how many candidates can file for office.
So you could have, for example, on the United States Senate, you could have 20.
That is correct.
It would be the top four bubble getters, in essence. At the end of the collection, of those would go on to ranked choice voting. Is that how it would work?
As many can file for the primary election as they feel fit by June 1st.
Okay.
And the primary happens, everybody votes for one candidate, and the candidates for each race, the top four will advance to the general election, and there will also be a space for write-ins then.
Okay, and I just want to be clear that when people see the examples, it could be a really big sheet depending on who is qualified. Okay, copy. Just want to make sure that was correct. And Senator Costello?
Thank you. And I'm asking this question understanding what happens in the ranked choice voting general. So the losing candidate, that person who received votes, first votes, you know, their number one slot, people who then chose a second spot, those get calculated, and you just keep going through the list, going through the process until somebody gets 50% plus one or who wins. Why is there a primary? Why would we go through all the costs of having the election only to narrow it down to four people, and then you go to the general and you're doing the ranked choice voting, because a ranked choice voting could handle a lot of more candidates than just four. So what's the reason for having the primary?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, it's not a call by the Division of Elections. That's a policy call by the state legislature. And if there are any legal issues related to needing to have a primary, Tom Flynn could handle, he's online to be able to handle those questions. But that's the way current state law is written, that there is a primary election that nominates candidates to go to the general.
And it's my understanding that while the legislature can't reverse a citizen's initiative, we can tweak it. So can we get an opinion as to whether or not getting rid of the primary would still be holding up the spirit of this initiative, because in the general there will be a ranked choice voting, and why would we go through all the costs of having voters go to the polls twice when really the primary doesn't really have the impact? It's not a closed primary. It's not individuals choosing their party person. It's simply narrowing the candidate list down to four and then sending the voters back to the polls again through it with all that cost, you know, that we go through. Just curious if we could get that in a legal opinion.
See if Mr. Flynn, Thomas, if you want to just give a stab at that versus a, you know, I know sometimes these are broad questions that are, you know, have hard to answer without having sitting for an hour or two with a group of people talking about it. But any thoughts on that from Senator Costello's question?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, good evening, everyone. Tom Flynn of the Department of Law. So, Senator Costello, you're right that under the Alaska Constitution, for 2 years, the legislature can't repeal an initiative, but it can amend it. And whether or not something constitutes an amendment versus effectively a repeal, you know, is kind of a factual question. So getting rid of the entire primary process from ballot measure two, I don't think I can answer right now whether that be considered an amendment large enough to be a repeal or not. But we could look at that further. I mean, there is just the practical matter of if you have 20 candidates, fitting those in a 20-candidate grid where you rank them 1 through 20 would undoubtedly be challenging compared to just ranking 1 out of 20 and then going on to a ranked choice voting of 4.
So Senator Costello asked that question on the record, so we'll consider that an official request. If you could take a look at that and get back to us, I'd appreciate it. Of course.
And thank you for that answer. My other question is, as I mentioned before, Alaska is now the second state to have ranked choice voting in a statewide election. Does that other state have a primary?
I think
through the chair, Senator Costello, we happen to have someone from the other state here on the line, and I believe they do, but perhaps he could answer better.
Yes, we do have a primary. Maine allows ranked choice voting.
Nick, if you could just do me a favor, when you guys bounce back and forth, just name and who you are real quick so that they have it for the record, please. Thanks.
Apologies. This is Nick Murray with Maine Policy Institute, here from the invitation of Senator Schauer. Thank you for the time. In Maine, we have ranked choice voting for our primaries and for federal races, but not for state races in the general election. So in different races, we have ranked choice voting on both primary and generals, the short answer.
Good.
Just a comment. As the director just mentioned, so we now are going to have one ballot or one race, one vote for the primary. And then when we go to the general, we'll have the ranked choice voting. So I just, for the public listening, I don't want them to think, to take my questions out of line or anything. I'm just saying that I do believe that if at the end of the day you have ranked choice voting, that's in line with what the voters wanted. What passed is that now we have a primary, and it's going to reduce it to four people, plus there can be a write-in. Then we're going to take that to the general, and there'll be ranked choice voting. So I just want to clarify that.
Yep, those are all good points. Senator Holland, I think you had a comment or question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is probably just a theoretical question, but the other side of that, if there's only one candidate or two candidates or three candidates or four candidates, does it matter if we have a primary? Because they're all going to go to the general anyway. But I got a feeling it has a lot to do with setting up the ballots and having everything ready to go, that, you know, it wouldn't – it just seems to me it's a lot simpler. If you only have three candidates, why have a primary?
Through the chair, Senator Holland, excuse me, and Tom can jump in here if I misspeak, but because it is provided for in state law at this point in time, and if there's only one candidate that runs for an office or less than four, all of them will advance to the general election.
Well, and I just get the feeling that that's also going to give the general population, or at least that district, an idea of how to rank. You know, you're going to get a winner in the primary. You're going to get a number one vote getter. You get a number two vote getter, a number three vote getter. You know, it's may or may not be a problem. But
Senator Kovacic, were you done?
Nope.
Good.
Thanks.
Senator Kovacic.
Yeah, just something to point out about ranked choice voting in some of the historical areas I just looked up. There's 900,000 people in the Bay Area in San Francisco that are in ranked choice voting situations. They also have a primary. And there's 8.8 million people in New York City, which also has a ranked choice voting system and a primary that leads to that system. So I don't know. Those are very, very large areas. They're large cities, but they're larger in population than the state of Alaska. And I don't know if we're going down a rabbit hole when we talk about primaries and who needs to be in a primary and those types of things. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. And, if somebody's welcome to comment to it, I don't know either. I'm kind of, quite frankly, even on the jungle primary, I'm kind of meh. but the ranked choice part bothers me because of the complexity, things I'm learning as we go through this. But we'll see. Like I said, we're stuck with this, so we'll see where it goes. We may decide we hate this thing a year from now. We drastically, you know, move to get rid of it. We may think we love it. Who knows? Did you have any comments on that, Director? Because I know it was more of a comment. Okay, I have one. This is kind of an informational brief. That's the point. Ask the questions. But so when you're looking at there has been discussion about in the primary how you have your party affiliation or if you have it. So what are candidates required to or not have that's going to be listed on the both? And you can talk to both if you want or the other one later. For the primary and the ranked choice voting, I've heard different stories. So what will we expect to see? Do they have to put it down? Can they put nothing down? There was the issue about party affiliation, those things. So how does that play out in this?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to talk about that in some of the slides ahead. So
then I will hold that question until that time.
Okay.
Anybody else on this slide?
Well, I'm still – this slide, this is a new slide.
I'm going ahead of you that fast.
Okay. I wanted to point out this pink arrow at the top. The language that is in this box, this please note box, is required by ballot measure 2. And it's a statement regarding nomination, endorsement, and affiliation. It's making it clear that the candidate is that the designated affiliation does not imply that the candidate is nominated or endorsed by the political party or group. but only the candidate is registered or affiliated with that party or group.
So how does that, what does that really mean in English?
It basically, the primary election system now is no longer a method of the parties nominating their candidates to move forward to the general election.
So you could have, for example, somebody say they're a Democrat, but the party doesn't really support or nominate them, or Republican, but the party doesn't really support or nominate them, and they could say they are one. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, they have to be, when they fill out their declaration of candidacy paperwork, they have to indicate their party affiliation as how they are, you know, as it appears on my voter registration.
Right.
So they would be, say, I want my party affiliation, the clown group, to be next to
which
my name
have,
on the ballot,
by
registered. Maybe that was a bad one to pick because.
No, we actually have a clown group, so there's nothing wrong
but,
with that.
And they would say registered clown party or something, you know. So here in this example here, or they can choose to be listed as nonpartisan or undeclared.
But that doesn't mean that in the past where you would have a primary where they were endorsed or, I don't know if I'm using the right words, by their party, doesn't have to be the case of this one. It's just whatever they list. Is that true?
That is true. This okay. The primary system is not a system that the political parties nominate candidates to advance to the general election. And I don't know if Tom has a better explanation than what I'm providing. He's more than willing to jump
in. I'll get to that in a second. I just want to follow, because I've heard these different stories, so I want to bring them out now.
It's no longer a political party nomination process to get people
right.
from the primary to the general.
Because that's one of the issues I heard was the ability of, or this is taking away of, you know, the right to associate, et cetera, with that. And I'll let Tom answer that one, and then we'll go to Senator Kawasaki.
In order to be listed, though, as registered blank, they actually have to be registered with that party with the Division of Elections. They can't just say, I want to be listed as registered, you know, the trees. And they're in the registration system, say, as, you know, a nonpartisan or a different party. You have to be actually registered with the division with the affiliation you're putting here on your declaration of candidacy, which is what's going to appear on the ballot.
Right. And the reason I'm saying this is not because I've heard the arguments on, you know, both sides. And so this is not trying to get into the partisan side of it. I'm just trying to clarify that one of the things I've heard is that, you know, some people were upset on and the party issues that are out there. That they feel like some people might put that down, but they don't really support that candidate, so it was kind of unfair. I don't care about the politics behind it right now. I'm just making sure that this is clear, that people understand that that's kind of what happened with this, that you have somebody that may not be supported by the party, but they're registered, so they can put their name down and be that. And there were different thoughts about that, and I'm not getting in – I don't want to get into that because that's irrelevant. But that's, in fact, the case, that if they just show that they're a Republican, Democrat, clown party, that's going to show up on this piece of paper.
As they indicate on their
got it.
Candidacy form. Yes.
Thank you. And Tom, did you have an addition? If not, I'm going to go to Senator Kawasaki. Is that correct?
No, thank you, Chair Schauer.
Okay, thanks. Senator Kawasaki, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question is, you could always register just prior to June 1st as whatever party you want to be. So, like, I could register as Republican tomorrow or June or May 31st and be registered as a Republican through APOC and be on the list as a registered Republican, right? I mean, that's always been the law because we've had people who have registered as Democrats or Republicans who've later switched parties
yep.
the day before and then have run that way. So that's, I mean, the clarification is that we've always had that in place, right?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, yes. I mean, people have been able to change their party affiliation at any point in the game. And I can't speak to whether people are truly affiliated with the party or not. It's whatever they tell the Division of Elections how they want to be registered.
Yep, fair. Like I said, I'm just trying to get the clarification for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no okay, good. Other questions on this one?
Oops,
please continue. Hope I didn't make him jump ahead one this time.
Going too far. So
you'll
see
all of
here.
That, by the way, hold on one second. All of that is not showing up. On this, for some reason, is the whole slide showing up correctly behind us?
Yes.
Okay. On this, it's not. So I'm just making sure that people can see
it. The slide is showing up.
Okay. Good. That's all I want to know. We've got the brief in front of us, but there, it's not showing up fully. So.
It is.
Perfect. Thank you.
So you'll see here. This slide is to point out that there can be multiple candidates. Their candidates will be with different party affiliations in the same space for an office. So this for United States Senator shows registered Libertarian, Republican, nonpartisan, registered Democrat, registered Alaskan Independence. just to show that it doesn't matter what party affiliation, everybody shows up on the same ballot for the same race. There's also the possibility that there could be less than four candidates, as I mentioned before. And if that's the case, then all three will advance to the general election. Perhaps the biggest change for the primary is that the governor and lieutenant governor now have to file as a team by June 1st, instead of filing independently, separately, and running separately in the primary. In the past, you'll recall that you had a race for governor and a race for lieutenant governor, and the highest vote getter for Party A for governor was paired with the highest vote getter for Party A for lieutenant governor, and then they appeared together as a team in the general election. That has changed with ranked choice voting. I mean, with this ballot initiative, excuse me.
Question? Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just trying to look at this. It appears some of them are alphabetical, some of them are not. Is there a way the candidates are going to appear on the ballot? Is like a random draw or something like that?
Through the chair, Senator Holland. Sorry. Yes, we have a random drawing of an alphabet for how the candidates will appear.
And not clumping Republicans or Democrats together or anything like that.
It's just a random draw. We put all 26 letters of the alphabet in hat and draw them out. And then we say, this is the order they're going to appear.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
So thank you, Director, for being here. So I was under the understanding that those rotated. Do those not
Well, they
rotate?
Do rotate within the House district, yes. But we have an initial, excuse me, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. It's an alphabetized list, and then they rotate within the House district, yes.
So, and I might have missed that as I'm looking at the slides here, but the order that the names show up, is there a alphabetical? How do they show up on this list this way?
You know, well, it's a random drawing of the alphabet, Mr. Chairman.
That's what I think you were saying. I missed it because I was paying attention to the question that was
pretty much all 26 leaves Scrabble tiles. We put them in a hat and they're drawn out.
So there's no method that says, oh, you know, if your name starts with an A or a Z, you're going to be first on the list and vote for that. Gotcha. Senator Costello.
Thank you. Thank you for the example. It's my experience that the last name comes first, followed by a comma, then the candidate's first name. And that's not what we see here. Is that going to change then?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, no. This is just our, perhaps we should take that under significant advisement and put it the way it really will appear. But yes, it is last name, first name, middle initial, and then a junior senior designation.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out.
I think I skipped your follow-up anyway. Senator Holland, sorry.
So, and I just want to thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director. I just was curious as to did I understand that maybe within that voters may not get identical ballots because some ballots have different randomized lists just to randomize a little more, or did I misunderstand that?
Through the chair, Senator Holland, no. It's an alphabetical drawing that sets the first ballot for that House district, and then the next ballot, the top candidate goes to the bottom. And they just kind of keep rotating throughout the rest of the pads, the ballots on that pad throughout that House district.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
So this is just an overall summary of the changes for candidates for the primary. There is no longer a nominating petition process, which was the process by which candidates could bypass the primary election and file via nominating petition, gather signatures, and then appear in the general election. So all candidates who appear on the general election must participate in the primary unless you register as a qualified write-in 5 days, at least by the fifth day before the general election. Candidates choose what affiliation will appear on the ballot, and the governor and lieutenant governor file together.
Hold on just a second. Yeah, we'll make sure before we go through the next slide if there's a question. I believe we have one. Senator Costello?
Actually, I think I'll hold off until she explains the next slide after this one.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Okay. Thanks. Maybe. Okay, so now we'll move into the general election ranked choice voting explanation here. So previously, the election was operated under plurality or winner takes all. So the candidate with the most votes won, whether it was by one vote, two votes. It was just whoever had the most votes won. As you can see here that on this sample ballot here, this statement that's required by the law still appears again that says just because this appears next to the name of a candidate, it doesn't mean that that party actually nominated or endorsed them.
That's what I was asking about before. Yeah.
And the ballot is a grid style ballot. So you have the names of the candidates in rows, four of them, and a space for write-ins, and you have five columns here for the voter to be able to rank their choice, filling in an oval in each column or row, depending on how many candidates they want to rank. And judicial retention candidates and ballot measures and any, obviously, are still remaining yes, no votes.
For the write-in. Just asking, the fifth one is for the write-in, fifth column.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fifth choice would be because we have five candidates. It didn't mean you have to rank your write-in fifth. It would just mean...
Right. That's my point. You would have one. If you didn't have one, you would just have your fourth.
Because the bill did not... I'm sorry. The bill did not alter the write-ins that are allowed for by state law.
So I do have a question, actually. So if one of the people that was in the top 10 or whatever they were before and they didn't make the top four, can they put their name in as a write-in? And is there only allowed one write-in?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, they can file as a qualified write-in no later than the fifth day before the general election. Yes.
Wow.
So they could be anybody. They don't have to have made the cutoff for the write-in. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Anybody can file as a write-in candidate.
They could be 20 out of 20, and somebody could still legally write them in as a write-in here and put them as their first choice. Okay.
Point of clarification?
Yeah, go ahead.
Point of clarification, define what qualified write-in means. I mean, I think that's important.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, qualified write-in means they have to file their notice of intent to be a write-in candidate, similar to a declaration of candidacy form, with the Division of Elections no later than the fifth day prior to the general election.
If you make a mistake, you can ask for a new ballot. What is the statutory guidance, if we have any, on what happens to those ballots?
Mr. Chairman, they are shredded, and then the precinct election board records down a spoiled ballot and will reissue a ballot to a voter. And they're allowed for, I think it's up to three. You can spoil your ballot three times according to state law and be issued a replacement ballot.
If and again, a lot of these, I'm just going to ask questions. I think I know some of the answers, but for the public, is it a requirement of ranked choice voting that a candidate gets 50% of the vote to have a majority to win?
Mr. Chairman, the law says 50% plus one.
That's the first round. What if they don't win in the first round? Do they have to
get 50%? Mr. Chairman, the counting continues until a candidate reaches that threshold, or there are just two candidates left.
So it is possible for a candidate, for example, to get 40% of the overall vote and still win the election?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain of that. I don't know if Tom has an answer for that. Honestly, I don't have an answer for you at this point in time.
I'm asking because I know the answer, but I just want to, this wasn't a gotcha on it. What I have been told, which is why I'd like them to answer, is that the way it was briefed last week, we talked about it, and we've done a little research since then, is that in many of the RCV events, because one of the things about it is supposed to kind of give us that plurality, somebody having 50%, so they are a majority, the backing of the people, et cetera. The way I understand it, and so I would like to get clarification, is that in fact does not have to happen. Somebody could have 49% or 45% or whatever it is and still be declared the winner after the computer algorithm is applied to this. Is that a true or false statement? And I know, Director, you said you weren't sure, and so maybe...
I think Tom would probably be a better person
you bet.
To explain that.
Perfect. Tom, was that question clear enough? I can restate it.
Yes, Chair Schauer. So there's two types of counting in the ranked choice voting, I think, as you've alluded to. The first one is the counting of the first choice votes. And so if a candidate has a majority of those first choice rankings, then that candidate wins. And then if no candidate wins in that first round, then it continues until two candidates remain and the candidate with the most votes wins. as I think you discussed last week, the denominator can change over time, right? Because people may have only ranked one or two candidates. And so by the time you get to two candidates left, it is numerically possible that it isn't a absolute majority that would win at that point. It would be a majority of the votes counted in the final round amongst those two candidates, but it might not be a majority of all the votes counted throughout the whole ranked choice process.
Thank you. And I may ask Nick to comment as well. But the reason I point this out is because I think one of the things people think is that we will get somebody that will definitely get a majority of the vote, and that is not necessarily the case. As a matter of fact, I believe the data said it was the majority of the time the candidate does not win a majority of the vote at the end of the day. But the other part, if somebody, one of you could talk to it, is that's without including what happens with exhausted ballots, because if you take out that average 10 or 11%, that number could be significantly lower. So I just want to get that on the record. What does that mean when we look at what the results may be? How does that play out into it, the math?
Yes, I'm glad to jump in, Senator Schauer. Thank you. This is Nick Murray. Mr. Flynn's correct. The winner is decided by whoever has the most votes in that final round. So it is essentially a plurality of the last round votes. As you alluded to, our research showed that over 60% of ranked choice voting elections, the winner does not gather the support of more than 50% of the total votes cast, and that is due to the phenomenon of exhausted ballots, those ballots which are not continued through to the last round. So that's how you get this sort of last round plurality winner.
Okay, thanks. I don't think it's a particularly germane point because, quite frankly, in the past when we had normal voting, the winner got whatever they got. Could be 48%, and if the other person got 46, well, they won, and that's it. So I just wanted to point it out that I think there is a perception that this will always give you a person that has the majority of the votes from the night of the election, and that I don't believe that's the case. And so, again, like I said, I just want to clear it up, and I have. So if somebody has a follow-up, that's cool. I just want to – okay. Senator Ramble, go ahead.
This is a little bit different question, but in the same vein. Basically – so this is United States Senator here, and these are the ranked choice. Four of them moved forward after the primary, and then there's a write-in spot. And then there's five columns that people get to rank them one through five. What my question is let's just say there was 10 people that originally ran, and you said that they all could end up becoming write-ins. My question is then could like a whole bunch more people as well, and then everyone's just forced to pick their top five of, let's say, 15 candidates.
I'm through the chair, Senator Redbull, and I'm not sure if I understand what you're asking. Are you asking if there's only allowed one space for write-ins in the general election?
Good follow-up. That's fine.
Actually, what I'm wondering, if there's a whole bunch of spots. I mean, could there be 15 spots for a write-in, but then everybody is forced to rank it one through five?
Through the chair, Senator Redbull, no, there is only allowed to be one spot for write-in candidates in the general election. There can be multiple candidates that file for write-in, but there's only one space available on the general election ballot.
Can you explain how that's chosen?
I would like to defer that to Mr. Flynn at the Department of Law.
Thomas, you're up.
Under the record, division interpretation of the write-in statute.
Just give us your records again. Don't forget. Name.
Yes, I'm sorry. Chair Schauer, Tom Flynn at the Department of Law again. So the write-in statutes were unchanged by Ballot Measure 2. So in combining those two together, Ballot Measure 2 and the existing write-in statutes, the division determined to just do the one opportunity to list a write-in. So as the director said, there might be multiple write-in candidates who've filed and are properly qualified, but the voters can pick one and rank that however they choose.
Okay, no, it's not clear. Follow-up, please.
Go ahead.
So where would they get this list? I mean, if there's only one, they have to hand write the person in there then. Is that basically – but they're only allowed to write one in. I see where you guys are going now.
Through the chair, Senator Redbull, the list of certified writing candidates is available on the division's website. We also have that list available at the polling places.
So there could be 20 write-ins, but you only get to pick and write in one.
Yeah,
if you want.
I see that now. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah, good clarification. Thanks, Director. Other questions on this slide, first, Director, okay. Wherever you were.
So this slide is just showing some examples of how you can and can't mark, how you can mark your ballot. And then I will try to give an explanation here of what each of this, how these will each count. Under no circumstances am I trying to advocate that a voter has to rank every single candidate on the ballot. It is still the voter's choice if they want to rank one, if they want to rank all four of the printed candidates, or five if they want to write in a write-in vote. That is entirely up to the voter. This top ballot here shows how there is one oval filled in each column. This ballot would be fully accepted at the precinct, meaning that the scanner would not return it to the voter and say, hey, you have an overvote, or there's an issue here with how you marked your ballot, which if that does happen, and that could happen in these examples below, and I'll talk about that, the voter would have an opportunity to decide if they wanted to correct their ballot or just override it and let it just go through the way they marked it.
If they were to do that, Director, would that count as one of their three if they decided they wanted a new one to refill it out?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it would.
Thank you.
So this first example here over on the left where everybody is marked in the first choice column, this is a straight overvote. So we would not, the division cannot determine if the voter just decided, yeah, I'm going to let this go through. I don't care. I don't really care about this race or whatever. This would be an overvote, and no vote would count for any of the candidates in this race because you can't determine who the voter intended to give their first choice to. And the scanner will return the ballot to the voter and say, we've got an overvote. Do you want to, you know, and the voter, like I said earlier, can just determine to override that or accept it.
And they could have every other one filled out correctly in the other races, just one overvote or undervote, and that one would be returned, correct,
Chairman,
that question?
Correct. It will identify which race there is an issue.
And one more question, that when you said they can correct it without turning that ballot in as one of their three, how would they correct it? Because I thought with the pen, you're pretty much done if you screw that up.
Mr. Chairman, they would have to go back to the board and say, I want a new ballot.
Okay, copy that. It just clarifies when you say correct it. Understood. Senator Costello.
Thank you. And Gail, I might suggest that if this slide is used to help educate the public, that it perhaps gives the impression with the second one in the bottom, the middle ballot at the bottom, that might give the impression that a voter can only choose two. But what you're trying to communicate with that slide is that the votes have to be consecutive. They have to be first, second, then they could drop off. And that scenario is not contemplated here where there's a drop off. So I might suggest that you add another option where you show a first, second, third, perhaps no fourth, no fifth, and you have the green check mark, because this perhaps would give an elderly person looking at the presentation the impression that the only way that their ballot is allowed is if they fill out the entire options of one through four. And that is not correct. From what my understanding is that, let's say, for example, you have somebody who's of a particular party and they are not comfortable voting, casting any vote for perhaps another party. So they might go into the booth and they say, oh, I'm going to vote for all of the party that I'm a part of. But I'm not going to then, you know, on my maybe fourth and fifth vote, I just won't cast, I won't do that. And that actually is allowed. That ballot is allowed. But I'm just concerned that this might give the impression that unless you filled out the entire option of choices, your ballot is not legal, but it is. And then that's a point. I'm just a suggestion to you. And then I also think you might want to say something like, you know, make the choices consecutive. You can go one. You can do one, two, three. You can do one, two, three, four. You can't do one, four, one, three. It has to be consecutive. And then
or could you do three, four, right?
No, you don't want to skip your first choice because you're going to miss out on the most. It's my understanding that most of the ranked choice voting results, you actually go only to the second round, and usually the person who's ahead after the first round ends up usually winning after the second round. So if you want to be a thoughtful voter, you want to put your first, second, all the way up to the people that you feel comfortable voting for. And if you want, you can fill it out the whole way. So anyway, I would just make that suggestion.
Through the chair, Senator Costello, point well taken. Yes, when we do make this presentation, we do explain those types of situations. Granted, they are not on the visuals, but we do talk about that.
Just is that follow something up? That's on the website? So this is what people would see if they go there as an example that would be available to them?
There are, I'm not sure, I think these three examples are on our website, but we'll take that into under advisement and look at adding the other situations that you mentioned as well.
Your point's valid, Director, because if you're there's a lot of people that will see this without having the benefit of a discussion somewhere, so they will miss that. And I, you know, the picture is worth 1,000 words in this one. I think it'd be better to have a couple pages of good and bad examples than not enough, because Senator Costello, I totally agree with that. That's right, man. I know you're shaking your head. I get it. That I would love to see that, because I think that will be part of the educational effort, because we go back to the data, and I am going to ask Nick to answer that one from Senator Costello about how this plays out, because there was a question she had in there about that I think would be germane to maybe the data they saw out of this, but more is probably better in this case, because there are definitely a lot of confusions. Nick, Senator Costello had made a point there. Can you address that about, not I have to say exactly what you said, but it was up your alley coming from the Maine Policy Institute there with that.
This is Nick Murray from Maine Policy Institute. I'm trying to remember the exact point there. Something else related to that second image down below came to my mind, but Senator Reinold, could you please repeat that?
Thank you, and through the chair. So the point is that what is not okay about the bottom middle ballot is that it's not consecutive. The voter did not make a consecutive choice, first choice, second choice. So I'm concerned that this isn't explained well enough as to why it's not allowed. It's not allowed not just because – it's not allowed because they only had two choices. It's not allowed because the two choices they had were not consecutive. And that – not in that consecutive choice where they, let's say, choose one, then two, let's say they don't know the other candidates and they say, well, you know, I'm not going to do a third and fourth. That is okay. It's okay to do first and second. It's okay to do a first choice. What's not okay is skipping. And then I did have a question, a comment too, from an earlier conversation.
Before we do that one, Nick, and I'm going to add to that because I kind of remember what she said. She had said in the context of that delivery right there, she said, well, you know, we think based on, you know, what has happened, that this would be the result. And so I was hoping that maybe you could just comment to what you have seen for the data you've studied from Maine's elections and other things across the country that might highlight how that was an issue. Was it an issue? How much of an issue was it where people were doing these things, if that makes sense?
I don't have the exact – this is Nick Murray from Maine Policy Institute. I don't have the exact numbers of how many votes were declared under votes, and this that sort of goes to the extent of my question for this second row middle here is, in Maine, if a voter ranks their first choice and skips two columns and ranks, say, the fourth bubble with no others, that ballot would be counted just as having marked the first choice. And I think to the point of voter clarity, maybe something to that effect would be more helpful, because a voter could mark this ballot. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like if the machine picked up a clear overvote or something to that effect, it would allow the voter an opportunity to cure that ballot. Would this sort of, first choice, skip two columns, fourth choice, would that trigger the same sort of, message for the voter to correct their ballot? Or would this be just counted as the first choice? The reason why I ask is because in the state of Maine, the Secretary of State delineated those rules where if there's two columns skipped, that's where the ranking ends. Versus if there's only one column skipped, then the later rankings just move up. If only the second choice is blank and third or fourth are ranked, the third and fourth would move up to second and third. That's how we do it. Ms. Venumia, if you could just comment on that aspect of voter clarity. Would this ballot be rejected or sent back to the voter? Would it be counted through only for the first choice, or how would the Elections Division count that?
Thanks, Nick. We got the director, and then Tom wanted to jump in too, so director, go ahead first, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. In this example, the law states that you cannot skip two or more sequential rankings. So the ballot becomes inactive at the point where that happens. So in this example, candidate A would get one first choice vote for this race, and then the ballot would become inactive for the rest of the, just for this race only, not the whole ballot, just this race. And this also would trigger a message to the voter that you have a problem here and you have an option to fix it or not. Senator Costello also mentioned that, you know, if you do mark, and this is one that we definitely will be adding, first, you skip your second, and you go to three and four. If your first choice then is eliminated, say, and rank second choice column is empty, your third choice then becomes your second choice when you get to tabulation rounds.
So I have a question on that for you, probably for legal, but are we not changing somebody's vote in that case if they had no intention because they didn't want to put that person there in that ranking? How does that apply? You're moving somebody's bubbles for them. That seems kind of odd to me because they didn't do that. The computer's doing it, or we're doing it. How does that work? Anyone?
So, Chair Schauer, Tom Flynn again. Ballot Measure 2's language talks about the highest-ranked candidate. It doesn't talk about your first-ranked candidate, your second-ranked candidate, your third-ranked candidate. So, for example, if you had a ballot and all you filled in was one bubble for fourth choice, that would get counted as your first choice. Everything gets moved up to its highest choice. So, and just to emphasize what the director said, voters can skip one column, they can't skip two. So once you skip two, everything after that doesn't get counted. You could skip one and it would go to the next one. And it's the next highest ranking on the ballot rather than the rankings in some sort of numerical order, if that makes sense.
Okay, I have to think about it. It seems weird because it seems like I think I understand the concept behind it, but it's almost like we're moving somebody's choices for them. And that seems like that's a pretty tenuous place to be because if they said they skipped it for a reason, I don't know why they would, but if they did and they wanted it that way, could they come back and say just run it that way? I mean, and they're just out of the round two and they go with round three if there was one. This is where this gets so simple, right? We start talking about, you know, the third round to the where they get distributed, et cetera. So let's say that example. They picked first. They skipped a second. They put a third and a fourth. You move the third and a fourth to second and third.
Chair Schauer, Tom Flynn again. I don't know that a third choice ranking has any meaning really without a second choice in between it. I don't know that that makes sense either from the voter's point of view or from a counting point of view.
Don't think you're not going to see it, partner, on election night, because you will, probably a bunch of them. I mean, seriously, this is a real thing. We're going to face this. People are going to fill these things out in all kinds of manner. There's no way you're going to get some of these. So how do we handle them? That's the question, right? This is where this is not that simple. I'm looking at it, go, okay, so what happens in that case? And is that legal? Maybe it is. It's totally fine. Absolutely. I'm just asking because it seems like we're moving somebody's where they put bubbles for a reason. Could have been a mistake, and maybe that will get corrected. But if they say I want them there and then we were to move them, I go, that doesn't seem right to me. That seems like we're kind of doing something off. That's question one, but maybe you can't answer it. I think it's basically what you said. You don't know. I'd love an answer on that. And the second part is, what do we do for absentees? Because we've mailed out tens of thousands of absentees, and they're all going to come in, and some of them can come up to 10 days after the election, and there's no time for them to cure these, and they're not going to have any idea, like voting in person, to do this. How do we handle that?
Mr. Chairman, that same situation can happen now if they overvote a candidate, and we are going to be sending them, as we always have, information on how they can correct their ballot if they don't have time to receive a replacement ballot.
Okay, so let's run the timeline out. Somebody decides to send it in like right before the election, and they, you know, it comes in 7 days after. I think our limit's 10, right? We count them to 10 days after?
10 for within the U.S., postmark 15 for outside.
So it comes in on day 10. And they don't have time to cure it. Their vote essentially is not going to count if they have some of these things written down. Is that correct?
And Mr. Chairman, that same situation is now once a ballot is voted and mailed, there's no opportunity to fix it.
I understand, Director. What I'm saying is that this is not the simplest thing in the world. This is a little more complicated, and we're going to have questions, and there's not going to be anybody in person to help somebody out like they would at home trying to figure it out. And we've already highlighted that there is this is not about whether this is the law. I want to make that clear. This is about the fact that we're going to ask people to understand this, that we're having a hard time understanding it now. This is my point for the public. We're going to ask them to do this. They get it wrong. They send it in close to the election. It's really going to be difficult for them to come back with not asking anybody to try to cure this in the amount of time. We're looking at ballot curing. May not happen this year. Oh, well. based on the status of things. But this seems like we're, I guess I feel like we're making this is fairly complicated, and we're going to not give people the opportunity to clean these up very well if this is happening based on the amount of absentees and mail-out ballots we're doing in the state right now. I don't know if it's a solvable problem. I'm not even sure how to ask that question to you, quite frankly. It's just one of those I'm looking at this going, boy, this doesn't seem – this seems like it's kind of setting us up for a lot more problems, the people that are going to have mismarked ballots or things not perfect, and then how do you fix that for them? Because what's going to end up happening, if I'm not wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, those ballots are, or that part of the ballot at least will be exhausted, won't count.
If Mr. Chairman, that's correct. If there's an overvote or two sequentially skipped rankings, yes, that ballot for that race would be inactive.
So we're back to the problem of the exhausted ballots, just one of the concerns. Highlighting this to people so they understand there's a high chance of exhausted ballots, which means your vote's not going to count. So I get it, and it could have happened before. I understand that. This one's slightly more complicated than the previous way we did business. It was pick one. So, okay, I'm going to move on from that, unless Tom or Nick had a point, and then I'm moving on. They're not. Nobody? It was a wave off.
Tom Flynn again, real quickly, Chair Schauer. So the statute talks about highest ranked continuing candidate, and it's AS 1515-350 if you want to take a look at that.
Hold on. Say that one more time, please.
AS 15.15.350.
Thank you. And has Maine or Nick, are you aware of any challenges to that moving? It doesn't sit right with me. It's probably totally legal. I don't know. But that just doesn't feel right. Do you have any comments on that? Or is there any aware of any other issues where that's popped up in the courts?
This is Nick Murray. No, I'm not aware of any challenges to that specifically. I believe Maine worked out the same way. And you know, you sort of have to think of it as each ballot is ranking the candidates in a particular order, not necessarily that they're dedicated to each round of counting, but I think that's correct. And just to comment on this slide, this bottom on the right, this essentially would be the same situation where if the voter left that second choice bubble blank, it would work in the same way. Is that correct, where the third and fourth choice bubbles would move up to second and third because that voter has already picked candidate A?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I was going to point out this third example here. Candidate A could only receive one first choice vote. So if candidate A does get eliminated in round one, the next choice vote for this, the way this voter would have marked the ballot, would go to candidate B.
Thank you.
Defer, I think that's Senator, well, we'll go to Senator Ramble to Senator Costello.
I'm just going to piggyback off of both of Senator Costello and Chair Schauer saying, I think that there needs to be like three or four of what's okay, you know, with the green, you know, examples on the top. I think that's a really super good idea. And also why these three or four, you know, that you're going to put on here is wrong. Like on the fourth one, you know, you can't have four number one choices. Just explain why these are wrong. I think it's really, really important in your presentations. I think it'll go a lot faster for one, and it'll be a lot, you know, provide a whole lot more clarity and be far more educational. And I personally wouldn't want to be you after this next election. I think it's going to be mass chaos personally, you know, the 2 weeks post this next election. And that's why I would do everything in my power if I were you to make this a whole lot clearer, because this slide's a mess if you ask me. I mean, it's very confusing. So
take a long vacation, Director, before the election.
Oh, sorry.
That's
okay.
Thank you. And I appreciate this, the discussion, and I think it highlights the importance of passing a measures in some of the election bills that we have, specifically in regards to ballot curing. So for the public who's listening, who's never heard that term before, ballot curing simply means that, let's say, Grandma Anderson forgot to sign her ballot. If you have ballot curing, then that ballot can be returned, the signature can be applied. And so that is better for the voter. There's, you know, if you want integrity for the elections, that is one way, through ballot curing. So if you can track your ballot, and then if there's an issue where it needs curing, I'm 100% in favor of that. My concern right now is it seems like there's an advantage to the voter who goes to the polls in person, because they have the option to do ballot curing real time, you can say, oh, you know, you've accidentally put two first place choices. This is, you know, probably this is not something that you want to do. Yet if somebody mails their ballot in, and we know how popular mail-in ballots are, especially for those folks who, let's say in Alaska, you know, they don't want to go out in November where it's icy, or elderly folks, ballot carrying, I think, is really important. And I think ballot carrying goes hand in hand with ranked choice voting, because I think you're going to see more confusion for voters who've never experienced this before, especially voters who are going to look at a chart with multiple bubbles and will find it confusing. So I think that, you know, I'm not advocating for a particular version of the bill, but I'm saying that, you know, this legislature might want to put serious thought into maybe pulling out pieces that we know are sort of must-haves when we move to a ranked choice voting environment, where I'm looking at this and saying, you know what, I've always loved going in person to vote. I'm going to continue to do that as long as I can. But I see that there's actually an advantage to going to the polls in person in this next election, because if something is accidentally done wrong on your part, you get a chance to correct it. And so your voice in the election is stronger than if somebody does a mail-in ballot and they don't have that opportunity. So I think that's an important part of the discussion. And I just want to throw that out there for the record.
Some of us are working on that. We'll see where it goes. I got a couple more questions, Director, really quick here. For bottom center picture with the red X, on the first round, if that candidate, that would count, right? But on the second round, obviously that ballot's going to get exhausted if we go to round two. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, this middle one here, the ballot, yep. The ballot is determined inactive after the first round of counting because this voter skipped two sequential rankings.
Right. I'm going through other examples like we talked about that would be helpful, yes, to have different, because at this point you probably almost want to have maybe not every conceivable one, but we definitely want to have some extra examples. What about somebody that does a different example of candidate A and they go first, second, third, fourth choice because they go, that's who I want for X, Y, Z, and I don't want anybody else. What happens to their ballot? What's that considered?
Mr. Chairman, if they mark all the way across.
Yeah, so let's say they go candidate A and they make candidate A their first, second, third, and fourth choice all the way down the line. What happens to that one?
Mr. Chairman, it's similar to this one over here. The candidate A would get one.
Which one? Sorry.
The last one over here where they marked two candidate A's, first and second. If somebody votes for a candidate and marks all rankings for that specific candidate, they're going to get one first choice vote and only one first choice vote.
So, to follow that thought, then when does their ballot get exhausted?
Their ballot then gets exhausted after round one.
There you go. Thanks. I'm just trying to highlight some of these for people.
It becomes inactive. I'm sorry. State law uses the term inactive ballot.
Understood, but it's exhausted, which, yes, trying to explain to people in plain English, that means your ballot doesn't count anymore. It's not going to be counted in the election.
For that race.
Correct. For that race. That's right.
That's another thing we're trying to really stress. It's not the ballot. It's that specific race that then becomes inactive.
But they may do the same thing for a lot of them if they think that. I bring this up because I've heard this on the radio, no less, on social media, where people saying, oh, you can fill in all the way across and it's going to count. No, you can't. Or I should say it's not going to count, knowing that we're probably going to go into a round two. So what I'm trying, part of this, Director, is to get this information out so that people understand that there is a lot of misinformation about how it works and what you can do. Because they need to understand that if somebody on the radio is saying you can fill in all four because you want Governor X, and we go to round two, your ballot's gone, most likely. So it's important for people to know that's part of this education process. But it is very fair. We have a lot of misinformation. Another point, staff was looking it up on the website just for your information. This isn't up. At least we couldn't find it yet. So we want to make sure that this information is getting out there as soon as we can. I think it only had the actual ballots that you had before sheets up. So we want to get that up as soon as we can with these examples for people, because this is a big effort for the next 9 months.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and when we go back tomorrow, we'll work on updating this PowerPoint to adding more examples.
Thank you. And I think Tom had a input. You had your hand up. You're waving.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Schauer. Tom Flynn again. So to go to your example where someone fills in all across, you know, I only want this one candidate. That ballot would only become inactive if that candidate were eliminated, right? So that vote counts towards that candidate. And if that candidate is eliminated, that vote still counts towards that candidate. That candidate might have lost, but that vote absolutely counts towards that candidate. It's just a losing candidate. It's actually no different than casting a losing vote in a single choice election. Your vote has been counted. It just counted towards a losing candidate.
Okay. That's fine. I'm trying to keep this in plain English for people to explain to them what that means on their ballot when they put it in there, because that sounds different than what we just said. I understand what you're saying, and I get it, but this is back into the confusing part of it, because you go, well, no, it counts, but your guy lost, and you went all the way across. Anyways, a whole lot of things here. I think you were first.
Yes. So, and it's exactly on that point. I just see Alaskans with an attitude. I mean, and it's not a good, bad, indifferent. I mean, it's just they're excited about elections, which I do think overall is exciting. But I can just see them filling all four. I only want, I'm going to do a more moderate candidate. Let's just say U.S. Senator Sullivan. I want him first, second, third, fourth. There is no other option in their minds. So, I mean, if I'm thinking about how Alaskans with you know, a lot of energy, that's what I'm thinking you might see happen on election night. So I think he's bringing forth a super, super important issue. So when you have to say, oh, no, your vote did count, I think what Mr. Flynn just said was really, really important, that it does count, but it would be the only time it wouldn't if they didn't make the top four out of five. So they would literally have to be in the bottom of the barrel. I mean, is that an accurate way to say?
Through the chair, Senator Rabel, correct. I mean, everybody's first choice will count unless, you know, obviously like the first example, it's an overvote. Your first choice is going to count. And as long as that candidate remains within the subsequent rounds, your vote has continued to, it counts. It's just that if that candidate, like Tom mentioned, gets eliminated because they were in the lowest, they had the least number of votes, then your vote counted for the candidate, but it doesn't continue to keep that candidate in the running, I guess, is a way to put it.
Now, just an answer to that, Director, this is not your fault because you're trying to execute the law that's given to you. I understand that most citizens, as Senator Rambel said, are going to show up on the night of the election, see this, and totally understand everything we're talking about. Duh. I mean, come on, guys. This is what I'm trying to get as a point across here. We need to educate. We need to get the right stuff. We need to get it out, but if you don't see a train wreck coming on this one, I'm sorry. This is I know we're not here to debate the goods and bads. I'm just saying, listen to this debate here. It's confusing. And trying to get this right. We got the Department of Law and a Maine Poly Institute fellow, the director of the Division of Elections, and five senators sitting here all going, huh? So anyways, for what it's worth, folks, take this one serious. And we need to be hard push to get this information out and social media and everything else, because this is not this is a tough one. This doesn't even feel like one person, one vote, to be quite frank with you, because you got to freaking fill out votes that you don't want to for different choices. I know that's a common complaint, is my point, from people. So I expect, based on how Senator Rambel said that, you're going to get people going, I'm not doing that. I'm simply not going to. And then what happens to the votes? Do we exhaust them? We'll see how it goes. We'll give it a shot. But I predict interesting results. So I think somebody else had a question. Senator Costello, I'm sorry. Then we'll go to Senator Holland. Senator Costello, no? She's like, oh, the free. Go ahead, and then we'll go to Senator Holland, because I know he was patiently waiting.
So just back to Senator Kawasaki's point at the beginning, it's going to be our job to all help educate Alaskans on how these ballots work. And I did get a flyer from you in the mail, and I liked it. It showed, you know, the different choices. Just a comment about the term overvote. I've never heard that word before. I think, to me, what makes sense is vote consecutive. Everybody knows that two follows one and three follows two, but I'm not sure people know what overvote means. I know what it means now. It means you skipped, you jumped over a number, and that's what you're saying is not really a good idea, because if you vote a first choice and a third choice, your third choice is your second choice. So I think there might be a way to just describe that as, you know, vote consecutive until you feel like you don't want to vote for that person or whatever. I think that might be helpful in paring down the confusion that might happen, especially with older folks, you know, who've been voting a certain way, you know, one person, one vote for so many years, and now they have a ballot that is going to take a little bit of educating to just try to, you know, figure out what it means.
I think Senator Holland has about, go ahead. He's back.
Well, you have a question. It was a little slightly different on that. You know, when they go all the way across, as long as their choice is always one of the top two, then their vote's never exhausted until maybe even it rotates out. It winds up getting pushed down to maybe third place just because of the fourth place count or something. Mm-hmm. So there is a way that going across, your vote is never exhausted if you're in the top two. And I don't even know if we'll get a chance to get around to this question, but I've just heard, and hand counts are just not going to happen with ranked choice voting, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Holland, yes. I mean, it's very, 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 very complicated to do a hand count of what in a ranked choice voting election.
Thank you.
So as the Lieutenant Governor told me in a meeting earlier last year, that we have to rely on the computer because there's no possibility of people doing this.
Mr. Chairman, that's what it looks like at this point in time. We're still, you know, we're still working on our procedures.
And if a follow-up for people that will ask the question, the ability to do a forensic audit if one was requested at some point because of, let's just say this comes out and has 30,000 exhausted ballots and people demand to know, it, can we even, because I was told, again, by the administration officials, we would not be able to do a forensic audit based on how these come in. Is that a true statement or not? What are your
Mr.
thoughts?
Chairman, I don't know about a forensic audit, but there are ways that people can take the data and put it into their own, you know, open source code tabulation system to verify that the votes were what they're supposed to be.
As a professor I was talking to a few days ago said that he was using the main second district election stuff, and because of how he couldn't get all the data from them, that he had to basically make it up on his own based on the de-identified voter data he was able to get, and said it was rather complicated trying to get to that point. So it's just this is a follow-up for if this happened, you know, if there was one, can we do it? It sounds like maybe, but rather complicated, and I mean, I'm curious if we have the information to actually do that if it was to come about.
Mr. Chairman, like I mentioned before, I'm not an expert on what even a forensic audit would entail, but I can tell you that there are ways to validate the ranked choice voting software with open source software modules that are available.
Okay, that's something we can talk about another time, open source, because I think that's something we probably should do is publish this so people see it, and there's no question whatsoever, and that's transparent, and that's perfect, and then that takes care of that. Senator Ramble?
This is not a rabbit hole. This is a dumpster dive. So just to echo what Senator Holland is saying, I think it's really, really actually very, very important. I think being able to, for you know, the people to understand the Dominion machines, you know, they don't have a lot of trust in them right now. So having the software and the Dominion machines, I think, is going to be critical. So Mr. Chairman, I would definitely think, you know, talking about the software, because we have to have the support and the trust of the people. And right now, because there never was a forensic audit, you should be able to get that concern out of their mind. And it's across the country. It's not just in Alaska. But I think there's 300 machines. I think talking about software and the machines and voter security, safety, cybersecurity, I think is going to be of critical importance in state affairs. So thank you for bringing this up. This has been absolutely fascinating industry and interesting today. And I thank you for the good speakers and the balance you brought to the table.
We can bring that up another time, Director. We can talk and email and figure it out. So I know you have two more slides. We'll try to finish them. We got 7 minutes left. So if we can go through them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next ones are about tabulation. And this isn't just something easy to explain, but this just gives you a rough idea. We have four candidates here, 20 total votes. According to ranked choice voting, it takes 11 votes to win. In round one, no candidate achieved the 50% plus one. So then we would move on to round two, which you can see above, candidate three had the least number of votes, so that candidate is eliminated, and those three votes are redistributed to the remaining candidates, or retabulated to the – whoops. Not very good at
so
this.
Why so discuss how they each get one so that people know what does that why does that happen?
We just picked that number. This is just an example. It doesn't mean that it's just that there were three votes for candidate C, and in our example we're to say we just made it up and said A gets one, B gets one, and D gets one.
But there if that was to happen with different numbers, it would be because of how the choices were there that you would tabulate. Correct? I'm trying to get it out so people understand why they were distributed that way.
It's the second choice votes for the ballots where candidate C was marked the first choice.
There you go. That's what I wanted to make sure people understand. Why does it show that second round?
Okay. And then here's
Senator Costello had a question on round one.
Yeah, I think it might be helpful to explain fully what happens in the round two rather than just say the candidate with the fewest votes gets eliminated, because that's not necessarily the full picture. People who voted that candidate as their first choice their second choices get redistributed as first choices. It's, this chart makes it seem like you don't have a winner until round three. You could have a winner in round one or two. And so I think that makes sense to people if they understand it's not just eliminating a candidate in round two. It's eliminating the candidate with the fewest votes. The people who chose that candidate, now their second votes get redistributed as first votes.
And point taken, Senator Costello, and that's exactly what this says here, and I just spoke a little too quickly without getting those words out of my mouth. So apologize for that.
But it would be possible in her case there if, let's say, that the third person that was eliminated, all of the first choice votes for them went to the first person, they could actually end up with 10 votes.
They could,
out of this,
yes,
and they
yes,
could
Mr.
win,
Chairman.
Right? Okay,
this like
is
said,
this is
just
trying to show
an
the
example
difference.
We made.
Got
I'm
it.
Trying to yeah. keep it as simple as possible to show that it needed more than two rounds,
and they need 11 votes to win. Yeah. Just to clarify that.
Yes. And so, round two, no candidate still received the 50% plus one. So then, round three has to happen. And as you can see by this example, candidate D received 5 votes. So then the third choice for the, on the ballots for candidate D are now going to be added to the totals for the two remaining candidates, A and B. And in this example, we just 4 of those third choices went to candidate B and 1 went to candidate A. Therefore, candidate B becomes the winner with 11 votes.
Once again, crystal clear. And this is different from somebody filling out the ballot. I get it. And the tabulation of it. But when you get to trying to explain it and how this works and strategy and other things, anyways, please continue.
So this is just a little slide to kind of let folks know what to expect on how we're going to count and when we're counting. So on election night, we are going to count first choice votes and report first choice votes. That will include some early votes, precinct votes, and some absentee by mail votes that have come in and been reviewed and are deemed appropriate for counting by the board. Then we will continue to count, as we always have, absentee and question ballots up through day 15. And every night we count, we will then release a new round of unofficial votes for first choice votes only. We made a collective decision at the division, because this is the first time we've ever done this, to not do tabulations during this middle period of time here, because we felt it would be very confusing to explain to the public what is happening. Because there could be the situation, Susie gets eliminated after round one, but then as we count more ballots that come in, Susie could actually get back in the race and Joe could be out. So we made the decision that on November 23rd, when the last eligible absentee and question ballot is counted, we will then look at the unofficial results and determine what races require the ranked choice voting tabulation to take place if no candidate has received 50% plus one. And that tabulation will then take place. We will be posting results on our website showing each round what happened with that race, what candidates were eliminated, and where those votes went to the next candidate. And again, those will be unofficial numbers until the State Review Board comes in and does their certification of the election, which approximately takes about a week.
Frankly, the first question, Director, is why would we even run the first round? Because quite frankly, you could come out with a different result from November 8th to November 23rd. Like you said, it could change. So shouldn't we collect all of these before we run the tabulation so we're not putting out information and causing more confusion and consternation and all kinds of other issues?
Well,
I know it was a choice, but I'm asking because it seems like instead of putting out something and knowing that that could change on us later as absentees come in, why don't we wait until the very end? And that's a delay and another maybe downfall of it. Oh, well, but why do we want to put out a result knowing it may change?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that happens now when we count. I mean, we count on election night, and then as we count absentee and question ballots, results do change. And so the division felt its best just to continue that practice. So that part of election reporting, result reporting, is not changed as a result of this. Ballot Measure 2 did not change how any of the deadlines happen or anything. And so we just thought it'd be best to continue that practice. At least people know, here's where everybody stands. on election night, and here's where people stand, you'll know who your top candidates are. Well, excuse me, you'll know who got the first choice votes. You'll know who, you'll know that information. But what we don't know, because we just felt it was important to continue to release that information so people understand we're still counting, we're not hiding anything, we want to get information out. And then on November 23rd, the tabulation rounds don't take any time at all to get done, but we will be posting, like I said, each round's results on our website so people can
watch. I guess my point, Director, is I understand that's the way it's been done, but if we're supposed to make it better, maybe we don't want to do that, and maybe the answer should be we just give one answer when it's all done. And because this is an opinion, nothing more than that, but it seems like if we have a chance to make it better, because that's the intent of this, then why don't we not do that? And I would also argue, based on the data I've seen from some of the other studies, I don't think we're going to see things quite like this, because there's been a lot of changes that we don't normally see to the extent we're apparently seeing with ranked choice voting across the country in that study that we looked at. So I think we may be setting ourselves up here for trouble, but that remains to be seen. I'll leave it. That's an opinion. It's where we are right now. Senator Holland had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You went right where I was curious about why are we even doing the initial count. And I could imagine why. We already have a bad rap for not being able to get election results out in less than 2 weeks. And there is some immediate gratification. People want an initial idea of how the election's going. But I just don't know that there's a reason why to do it if it's taken us 2 weeks and a day to come up with the final answer. So thank you.
Okay, and Senator Costello had a question as well.
Thank you. And my question is for the individual from Maine. So you're the only other state that has ranked choice voting in statewide elections. How many days do the voters wait before the election results are final?
It's taken a week or a little over a week in previous. Excuse me, this is Nick Murray from Maine Policy Institute. From my recollection, it's taken about a week or up to 10 days, I believe, to get that final tabulation result in the races that it kicked in.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So based on what you see that Alaska is planning, how could we get closer to 10 days versus 2 weeks? I mean, what's happening different in Maine is have you picked a date where you're a date certain where you're going to say we're going to do the results on this date, and so there's an expectation to have to wait that long? Or is there a way that we can speed this up? I mean, this is all computer counting. Why couldn't we get those results the first night? And the voters, as far as the voters not being confused, I think we're already confusing them. I think they understand the ranking, and so they should understand that it's actually possible for somebody to be ahead on that first round and not win the election. And I think transparency and honesty is actually valuable. This is the system that Alaskans voted for, and this is the system. So could you comment on that, please?
Sure. This is Nick Murray. I think you would have logistically, I think, you know, you want to get all of the voter data centralized as quickly and securely as possible. And I understand, you know, we have some remote communities here in Maine, but I understand, you know, the remote communities in Alaska is a different level. And we are talking about a sort of Excel spreadsheet of voter data, which, you know, every voter's ballot is a column per race, and the rows are how that voter ranked that data. So, you know, we contract with private couriers to ship by flash drive, by physical courier, to take the flash drive of voter data to the state capitol. So under the Secretary of State's purview, the tabulation for ranked choice voting can occur. So it's really how quickly and securely you can get that data there. I imagine you probably want to avoid something like electronic transfer to move the ballot data, but that's a question, I suppose, for the, you know, the state's risk profile. But yeah, long and short of it is, how quickly and securely can you get it to the central place? I could see it taking, you know, 2 weeks for a large state to get it to that point. But I think to Senator Schauer and Senator Holland's point, you sort of need to run that tabulation with everything in one place, or else things could change if more ballot data comes in later.
Yes. So in Maine, do you double check the United States Postal Service change of address requests and do you also verify voter signatures in that 10-day window?
I believe so. That is only for those mail-in ballots, the signature. But as far as I understand, I do believe they run it against the change of address form. And you can receive a ballot up till the end of the day on election day here.
Good. Director, I know you had a response to that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. So Alaska law allows by-mail ballots to be received up to 15 days following the election. So your final ranked choice tabulation couldn't be done until that point in time anyway. And also, in order to do ranked choice voting, the ballots have to be scanned. They all have to be scanned on the scanner in order to capture that cast vote record. And as you know, we have 130-plus hand count precincts. So those ballots already come back to the director's office in Juneau to be used and reviewed, and the State Review Board does their audit. So all those ballots are going to come back, have to be scanned in order to capture that the cast vote record. It's actually a picture. It's a grid of the ballot itself. And then those CVRs, the cast vote records, are what are used then in the ranked choice voting algorithm tabulation software. So until we get all those ballots back in, you can't even do the full ranked choice voting tabulation until all the ballots have been scanned.
Okay, thank you. Senator Kawasaki, I know then Senator Holland and Costello all had a question or a comment. All
right. No, we're at the top of the hour, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. I just wanted to make a request that you know, we were talking about how we make sure that voters are informed in the upcoming election. We know there was money that was set aside specifically for the Division of Elections for Education Outreach. So I'd just like to know how that's going. And this isn't obviously the Finance Committee or the Budget Committee, but making sure that folks do realize there's a new election cycle. How is this going to be operated? And give us some assurity that the division actually gets that work done. So. This is for a request for
the follow-up post committee with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Director. Thank you.
Do that.
Thanks, Senator. Senator Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank the director. I actually learned a bit today. I appreciate it. I had concrete answers to some questions I had. And not that you were evasive or anything. It's just like there was a few questions that actually just jumped right out at me, answers that jumped right out at me. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and I too appreciate your time. Your answer to the previous question just clarified something for me, that you really can't go beyond the first round until you have every single ballot, because you have to know if somebody actually is the outright winner. And so it seems that in this age of technology and modernization and progressive way to vote, you know, with ranked choice voting, that what we find is that we're just adding more time before the voters actually know the results of the election. So I understand that now, that if we're going to allow ballots to appear 15 days after the election, then we can't progress past round one until all of those are counted, because you could already have a winner that's just out there in the mail. We've had, there are people serving in this legislature who won elections by a coin toss. So in Alaska, we do know that elections can be very close, which is why I do think that it's important that we educate voters, and also that we do what we can to do things like Maine. Maine has ranked choice voting, and they also check their United States Postal Service change of address. I think they also check their signatures. I think anything that we can do to improve this integrity is really helpful.
I have one last question for the director, Tom, then I'll finish up, get us out of here. We've talked about two of the three provisions of the law, but just getting it all on the record, there was also a dark money part of it, too, from the primary to the ranked choice voting and dark money. That what exactly does that affect? I understand that it's more for the officials or the people that are running for office, but not ballot initiatives. Is that correct?
Anyone? Mr. Chairman, that's something outside of the division's purview, so I think Tom would be better suited to answer that question.
Figured it might be. Tom, is that a clear question?
Senator Schauer, Tom again. Yes, that's a clear question. I'm afraid it's outside of my purview, too. So I'd have to check with the attorney who more normally advises APOC on that. I mean, there are dark money provisions in that third part of ballot measure two. For specific questions, I'd have to ask others here at law.
Could you please ask that question? Because my understanding is that the dark money provision only affects the candidates, but what it does not affect is the ability of people that are running ballot initiatives to pull as much dark money as they want. And I think that was a little bit disingenuous. I would just like an answer. I haven't heard one. If somebody could tell me directly if that's in fact the case, I'd just like it on the record. That's all, since we're talking about ballot measure two.
Perfect. I will follow up, Senator Schumer. Yeah.
So for everybody here, Director, Nick, Tom, everybody else, the committee especially, and our support staff for staying late again. Try not to make that a habit. Thank you for the time. I think this is very helpful. There's some really good things we can still do. We got a long ways to go, and I think as is crystal clear here, this is not simple, and this is not going to be easy for people to understand. So we have got to do a really good job of trying to get this information out. I will try to keep this on the public consciousness, at least in session, and bring this up so we can come back again. Maybe at the end, Director, we could have another quick brief that would have the new example so we can push it out right before the summer and just try to keep it going, best we can do. So I appreciate everybody taking the time to do this. We're not done, obviously. That concludes our business for today. We will meet again here this Thursday, the 27th of January 2022 at 3:30 p.m. in this room. Mr. Josh Appleby, Chief of Staff, again, Lieutenant Governor's Office, will be introducing SB 167, the Governor's Bill on Elections, and we'll get HJR 16, Hmong Veterans Military Rights Introduction by Rep. Nelson. No other business before the committee. We'll adjourn at 5:11. Thanks, everybody.